We do, and so we do give you honor. We thank you, ladies, for your selfless sacrifice, both for your families and really for society as well. There's an old poem that goes, "The hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world." And the influence that you have often is not really seen until many years later, but it makes all the difference in a society. Well, bearing a child does not make a mom any more than fathering a child makes a man a dad. There are other things, particular things, that are part of that. And we're going to be talking about some of that today. And I'm looking for my clicker. There it is. Put the cursor on the main part and press once. That's it. All right, there we go. We're going to be talking about these characteristics because they're what sets apart someone who's a good mom from a bad mom, from a godly mother from an ungodly mother. And as we're looking at these characteristics, I want you to understand that these are marks for any woman, really. They're the marks of godliness. So whether you're mom or not, there are qualities that you need to be paying attention to that you want to develop in your own life. Now let me emphasize that as we're going through this, you're probably going to find some places like, well, you know, I don't match that yet. Don't let that discourage you. Our God is long-suffering. He is patient. He is kind. He's loving. And He is busy at work and desires to work in your life to help you develop these characteristics. So your goal really needs to be, how do I get there, not with, I'm not there yet and give up. How can you be known as a godly woman? How can you be recognized for those qualities? Well, recognizing your own lack in some areas is the first step to getting there. And that's what we're going to be looking at today. So don't let it discourage you if you're missing something. Let it instead be an encouragement to you of keep pushing on. Keep moving towards that mark. That's the high calling God has called you to. Now, men, I also need to remind you that this sermon is for you as well. You don't just check out here because we're going to talk about the ladies today. If you are married, you need to help your wife develop all these characteristics. She needs your encouragement. She needs your support. She doesn't need your condemnation. And the same is true for your daughters. Be encouraging them, developing these characteristics early in life. Now, if you're not married, then you still have responsibility, guys, because you have maybe a sister, you have sisters in Christ, definitely, and you should be helping them develop these same characteristics. Be those who are encouragers. And guys, if you're single, you need to do that because one of them might become your wife, all right? You'll get the benefit if she already has developed these characteristics. Now, there are a lot of Bible passages that describe various aspects of a godly woman. And all of them reflect the purpose of a woman's creation as described in Genesis 1 and 2, which we looked at last week. You remember that Eve was created specifically as a helper suitable to Adam. Her purpose in existence was that she correspond to Adam, she complemented him, and she assisted him in carrying out God's commands. Now Ephesians 5, 22 and through 33 speaks of the wife's submission, her respect for her husband as she's walking wisely with the Lord. And as she's doing that, then it becomes fairly easy to place her husband's will over her own if she's first in submission to the Lord. If you're not in submission to the Lord, you're not going to do it. It starts with walking wisely with Christ. In Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, Paul talks about older women being reverent in their behavior, those who are not malicious gossips nor enslaved to much wine. Instead, they are those who are teaching what is good to the younger women. And the younger women, in turn, are learning to love their husbands and their children, all the while being sensible, pure workers at home, and subject to their own husbands that the word of God may be adorned. Those are what scriptures tell us about the responsibilities and the privileges that really belong to you. 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6 adds to this. It speaks of a godly woman's chaste and respectful behavior. And here's the tough part, even when the husband is disobedient to the word. Now, that's a tall order to fill. But that's, I can't think of how you can demonstrate more your godliness of remaining godly even when he's not. But that's the goal, serving Christ above all else. Your service to your husband, your service to anybody, is only to be a reflection of serving Christ first and foremost. The passage goes on and says, such women are more concerned about adorning themselves with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit than how they dress themselves with the perishable qualities of external beauty. Sarah is given as an example of this. Her relationship with Abraham was one that reflected it. Now, there's a lot of other women that reflect many of these characteristics as well. Some of these you're familiar with. Lois and Eunice, 2 Timothy 1:5, Paul praises them because they had a sincere faith that they instilled into Timothy as the mother and the grandmother. Priscilla, also known as Prisca, is mentioned along with her husband Aquila in several places in Scriptures. These are incredibly humble people. They were willing to risk their lives for the sake of the gospel, according to Romans 16:3. But they also were those who would seek to help others. Specifically, they helped Apollos, and they helped him become the teacher he needed to be, rather than trying to get that position themselves. Godly woman. There's Mary. Her desire was to be, and she lived a life as the bondservant of the Lord, and it was regardless of personal danger that she faced. She, along with several other women, were the only ones that stayed with Jesus while he was being crucified, other than John. There's Abigail. She proved herself to be a wise woman, though her husband, Nabal, was a fool. He is, as his name suggests, a wicked fool. There was Deborah. Deborah proved herself not only to be wise, but brave when those around her were fearful. Ruth, a woman of great faith, abandoned her own homeland, her own family, to go with Naomi to Israel because she wanted to know about this God that she served. A Moabitess became a great woman of honor as becoming the great or the grandmother of David, great grandmother of David. Now there's a lot of other women that are mentioned as well. Scriptures are full of examples. And you can learn certain lessons from all of them, but there's no passage that is more extensive in describing the characteristics of a godly woman than Proverbs 31. If you'll turn over there, please. Proverbs 31, 10 through 31. Now, as we begin this study this morning, I want to note two things about the passage. The first is note there in Proverbs 31, verse 1. It says, the words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him. The human origins of this passage is not the thoughts of some male chauvinist who is trying to say, here's what I want, and try and get all the ladies to do this so he has ease of life. No, these are actually the words of his mother who was teaching him, here's what you're looking for in a wife. Here are the characteristics of a godly woman. And so King Lemuel's mother was used of God not only to have a great influence on him, but because it was written down in Scriptures on the rest of the world. The other thing I want you to note is that this is a poem. It's an alphabetical acrostic poem. There's 22 verses in it. Each one begins with the successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And that is done specifically so it would be easy to memorize. And that's how the Scriptures were passed along. They were memorized and passed along. So this is a poem. Each stanza, again, with the succeeding letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And that's why you'll find there's a few ideas that keep getting repeated within the poem. Well, let's read through it, and then we're going to come back and look at each stanza, all right? Proverbs 31, verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arm strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the way of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, "Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates." Starts off in verse 10 with a question. An excellent wife who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. Expression's a wish, a desire, a voice given to this searching out a valuable treasure, in this case, a woman. The term excellent here, kail, is translated as various ways, but also as virtuous. The root meaning of the word is strength, and in this context, it reflects strength and character, strength of ability, which is then described throughout the rest of the poem. This is a wise woman, a woman of great moral goodness, of propriety, and it's combined together with fine manners. She understands her culture, and she has physical strength to carry it all out. Her virtue is an outgrowth of her godliness and her wisdom, which we'll see throughout the poem. Now, such a woman is hard to find because she is of such high quality, and there are few that achieve such character distinctions and ability. Now, that's the reason she's compared to the value of a jewel. Now, jewels are not valuable just because they're beautiful. They're valuable because they're rare. Now, quartz is a very lovely crystal, but it does not hold much value because it's very, very common. Diamonds, on the other hand, are very valuable because they're not common. They're rare. Marble's very pretty, but because it's common, it's not that valuable. There are other rocks and minerals that are not any more beautiful, but they're more valuable because they're harder to find. So this is a woman who's marked by such wonderful character qualities that she is rare and therefore extremely valuable. Now, the reference to her worth being more than jewels or rubies may actually be a reference to the type of dowry that would have to be paid for her. Remember in ancient Israel that the man would have to come with a dowry to give to the father in purchasing his bride. The more valuable the bride, the larger the dowry. And so this could be a reference to that. Abraham did that in getting Rebekah as a wife for Isaac. Jacob paid a dowry to pay for both Leah and Rachel. So such a woman of excellence would bring a very large dowry. Well, what are some of the characteristics that make her so rare? Well, first of all, she's a trustworthy wife. The heart of her husband trusts in her. He will have no lack of gain. Verse 11. Now, that's the first direct statement of how she fulfills this purpose given in Genesis 2:18 as a helper suitable for him. The word gain here is actually a word that means spoil of war. It signifies that she brings profit into the household. He can trust her wholly because she is seeking what is best for the family, not just herself. He has no fear of her pilfering from the family or squandering the finances on herself. Instead, she's bringing profit in to the family. To put it in modern terms, you could say she can be trusted with the credit cards. Okay? She's not going to put the family into debt. She's instead going to increase its wealth. And we're going to see how she does that in a few verses. Now, too many husbands fear their wives are going to bring them down into debt through careless and frivolous spending. The actual truth is, statistically, it's the fathers, it's the men that tend to do it, because they tend to buy very expensive things and take your family down into debt quickly. Women tend to be fearful of that, and they do it slowly. They're both capable of doing it. Okay? But this man can trust her. That's actually an aspect of love, isn't it? 1 Corinthians 13 mentions that. He can trust her. And because she is trustworthy, we're going to find that her husband is able to pursue things outside the home that'll benefit not only his family, but the whole community. He could not do that if he did not have a trustworthy wife. We'll see that in verse 23. The virtuous woman is trustworthy, and so is a blessing and a profit to the entire family. Verse 12, she is continually good. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. Now, that's the source of her husband's trust in her. Now, finances are important in marriage, but marriage is not about finances. The gain that she brings in the family, mentioned in verse 11, arises out of this characteristic of doing good for her husband. The contrast here is with no evil. That strengthens the description. It shows there's no slip-ups. This is not somebody who is a mixture of good and evil. Some days are good, some days are bad. Only good, no evil, all the days of her life. And I say, well, wait a minute, I've already blown that one. Okay, so from today, pursue this. Don't let this kind of talk discourage you that you haven't reached perfection. We pursue that to be someone who's going to be good and not evil. Now, there's only one way this can arise, and that's from a deep commitment of a moral character in which true love reigns. That's where this is all arising from. It demands a self-sacrifice for the best interests of the other person. So she's not controlled by whims of her own emotions. She's not controlled by changing circumstances. She's not striving to find self-fulfillment in anything other than being God's blessing in doing her husband good. Her first and foremost, she's really serving God. So no wonder the heart of this man can trust her. Verse 13, she looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She's industrious. Now, part of the gain that she brings in the household is due to this industrious nature. We're not told specifically why she's looking for the wool and flax. We get some hints later on. Perhaps it's to make clothing for her family. Perhaps it's to make something that she can then sell. Perhaps both. Again, and later on we're going to see that she is doing something with wool and flax. The emphasis here, though, is on an industrious spirit. She doesn't wait around until something has to be done or until someone tells her to go do it. She goes out looking and selecting, carefully selecting. The word selecting here, darash, means that. Very carefully selecting the materials that she's going to use for whatever project she's working on. There's care in this. And please note the spirit that she has while she's doing this work. It says she does not have any complaining, grumpy attitude that seems to affect much of our society. Instead, it says she delights in the work of her hands. There's joy in what she's doing. She is active with her hands, pleasure. You see, work is a good thing. Ruth is probably one of the best examples of this. You read through the story and you find that she took joy in gleaning the fields and being able to bring back to Naomi's, here's what the Lord has blessed us with. She took joy in the work that she was doing. She is one that Ecclesiastes 5:18 would describe as enjoying herself in all her labor in which she toils under the sun during the few years that God has granted her life. That is her reward. Verse 14, we find that she is prudent. She is like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. In the care and the advancement of her family, this woman will go out beyond the nearest circle to be more prudent in her business and taking care of things. She will sacrifice her convenience to find what is best. Instead of looking for whatever stores are close because that's convenient, she sacrifices her own comfort and she goes out farther to find the best value she can in the items of the best quality she can. Now, when you think back in ancient Israel, she didn't jump in her car and run off to the mall. She had no car. There was no mall. It meant you walked or you rode a donkey if you were rich, and you got whatever and you carried it back, either by hand or on the donkey. So this was a lot more work. But like merchant ships, she went afar to find the best value, the best quality for whatever she was looking for. That takes a lot of sacrifice. And frankly, in a society that's increasingly focused on convenience, let's face it, the frozen food section in the markets keeps getting larger and larger and larger. I kind of wonder if it's going to take over sometime because it's now about convenience. What can I get pre-made, throw in the microwave, 15, 20 minutes later, it's done. That's not what she's doing. She's looking for value and quality. And so such a woman would stand out really highly in our society. She's extending herself for the best. She's also diligent. Verse 15, she rises also while it's still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. The care of her family is more important than her own comfort. Let's face it, it's easy to stay in bed and let those who have to get up early go fix your own stuff and let me sleep. She doesn't do that. Her desire is to be part of her family and minister to them, to serve them as best she can. Now, the issue here is not that she's a morning person. It actually isn't so much that she gets up. The issue here is that she's not selfish. She is not lazy. I know some of you you tend to be more night people, so you have it all prepared when they get up. You don't get up with them, but then you were up till 1 a.m. anyways, preparing it all. You see the issue? She's making sure her household is taken care of, and she has sacrificed herself for taking care of that family. Her life is focused there. We'll see this quality in a couple of the other characteristics as well. Now, if the portion to her maidens, that phrase there, portion to her maidens, refers to the daily work of her servants, as some commentators suggest, it also means a diligent household manager. She's directing the running of her home. She's not necessarily doing it all with her own hands, but she's making sure it is done. We also find in verse 16 she's entrepreneurial. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. So she understands business, and she knows how to increase her profits through diversification. Verse 13 indicates she may have some sort of business dealing with wool and flax, which you mentioned earlier. Here in verse 24, we'll find she's making things for sale. Here, she's involved in real estate and farming ventures. She's busy. She's very intelligent, she's wise, she adds to the wealth of her household, not only through her own manual labor and manufacturing, but by wise investment in other interests. And notice where the funding comes from this as well. It says from her earnings. Now that implies a couple of things, that she's not loosely spending whatever's coming in. She's diligent at saving, so she has the funds by which she can invest. We live in a society that's very materialistic. And it's very common to find people living from paycheck to paycheck. We shouldn't be doing that. It's one reason we do the financial seminars every couple years. Learning how to use your funds so there is a savings, and out of that savings can come investments. She understands how to do that. Now, just as a side note here, Titus 2:5, Paul makes mention that young women should be workers at home. That does not exclude this. That sets the priority. And that always is the priority. She's not doing this until the home is taken care of. That's the issue here. In fact, we find that the Proverbs 31 woman demonstrates the very priority Paul mentions there in Titus 2:5. She is definitely a worker at home, and her home's in order. Because the home is in order, she can go outside the home and do other things. It also should be noted that what any particular woman does is going to depend on her particular abilities and interests, and that will vary greatly. So ladies, don't think that you have to go get your real estate license, all right? That's not what it's talking about. There's a principle that's involved here, though. The principle, she's entrepreneurial. Strong, verse 17. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She's not afraid of physical labor because she's kept herself physically fit. Now, in ancient Israel, there were no women's gyms. There was no curves. There was no all sport. There weren't gyms. All right? When we're saying that she's kept physically fit, it's because of the various daily activities of just running her home and business. Now, this is where you ladies need to say, and guys too, thank you, Lord, for letting us live in a time when there's all these work-saving things that we got, vacuum cleaners to help clean and all the gizmos you got in your kitchen and all those other things that just help you keep house. She didn't have those. It was physical, manual labor. No wonder she was strong. It takes a lot to run a household without any of those kind of aids. Aren't you glad you live in the age of electricity? I am. Even if I do get shocked once in a while trying to fix something. It's okay. I'll take the shock as we got the products. And it helps a lot. Okay, she's also attentive. Look at verse 18. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She perceives, she senses, the word here literally means to taste, that her profit from her industry, her enterprises, it's been good. She's attentive to the outcome of her labor and the investments. Notice as well it says her lamp does not go out at night. Now, you may be fearful of this verse, or that phrase anyways, because you're now wondering is, when does she sleep? Right? That's not what the phrase is talking about. Aren't you glad? It's talking about her attention to all the details. Her lamp does not go out at night because she's made sure that everything is arranged. Remember, their lamps were fed by oil. In order to make sure the lamp does not go out at night, you have to make sure there's a supply of oil in the house. You also have to make sure that before you go to bed, you've gone and checked all the lamps and make sure there's enough oil in them. Therefore, the night light is on. She's made sure of that. So she's diligent, she's a hard worker, she's made sure her home is prepared for whatever needs to come on a daily basis. And she is a hard worker. Look at verse 19. She stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hands grasp the spindle. That's the reason verse 13 mentions her looking for wool and flax. Here, and remember, this is before the spinning wheel. This was a lot of hard work to make the thread by which you make the cloth, by which you finally make a garment. That's a lot of work. But here she is. She's preparing this material for either sale or for making clothes for family or both. And again, it doesn't mean you have to do the same thing she does. You may not like to do anything with making clothes. But there are things that God has equipped you for. My mom was not a great seamstress. She's a few things here. She could repair things. But she loved art. So hers was she'd make art objects, and then she'd go sell those things. It's the same principle. She saw what she could do, and she was diligent and worked hard at it. And, of course, while we're young, she got the boys involved with it, too, and we would prepare things for her so she could do the artistic work. We did the grunt labor. That was managing her household. Okay? See how it all starts working together? Intelligence as well as diligence. A hard worker. But it extends beyond the family. Look at her compassion, verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. So the same hands that spun the wool and the flax now reach out beyond her family with compassion to assist the poor. The idea here goes beyond just providing the needs that the poor might have, food or clothing or whatever material thing. It goes beyond that because the words here suggest the idea of a tender touch to comfort somebody. Somebody who gives godly counsel, someone who encourages. So it's more than just physical stuff. She's not only a noble wife, she's a godly woman, diligent to fulfill God's commands. Deuteronomy 15:11 commanded them, "You shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy, to the poor of your land." It is out of that desire to obey God that she has compassion on those that are around. She's confident. Verse 21, all this diligent labor, her watchfulness over her family, gives her confidence regardless of what the future brings. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. So she's anticipated the future. She has worked hard. Her family is ready. They have warm clothes for when cold weather comes. And in ancient Israel, modern Israel as well, except for Mount Hermon, snow is rare. It just, your elevations are too low. It's too warm a climate. Once in a while there'd be snow, but she's prepared for that too. And not only is she prepared for with warm clothing, notice that it's scarlet clothing. We live in a time when dyeing clothes is cheap. And everybody here has various colored clothes. But it wasn't cheap then, and it wasn't easy to do. Generally, people would end up wearing fairly plain clothes because it would be whatever the color of linen or whatever they made it out of, whatever color the wool was, they try and weave that together. Because it got expensive to make dyes, dye the clothes, and then make it out of it. But her family is clothed in scarlet. So they're both protected, and they look nice. She herself looks nice. Maybe we could use the word elegant. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. So she used the colors available to her to make clothing of contrasting colors, the white linen and the purple-colored material. Now, those materials would be imported from either Egypt or Tyre. Both would have been expensive. Purple was the color for royalty because it was so expensive. She wears fine clothing as a result of her industry. Now, it's important to remember here, it's not the clothes that make her a virtuous woman. She wears the clothes because she is a virtuous woman. Her virtue has enabled her to pursue this and be clothed in such a manner. And actually, her clothing is appropriate to her position. Notice verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Because of her excellence at home, her husband was freed up to be involved in the public affairs of the land. He is one of the community leaders. And he couldn't have had such a position without her. In fulfilling her God-given role, she enables her husband to fulfill his God-given responsibilities. And actually, they are his. Remember, God had given Adam the command to have dominion. She is assisting him. Because she's assisting him, he can go out and now do something about it. Without it, he could not. All such women are to be admired. Actually, it was very appropriate a couple of weeks ago that on Pastor Appreciation Sunday that my wife Diana is included, and she came up here. Why? Because there's absolutely no way I could do what I do without her. It wouldn't happen. And we need to recognize that and be grateful. And ladies, don't think it's a backseat. It's not. Paul tells us in Romans 12, when one member of the body is honored, the whole body is honored. Husband and wife, you're one flesh. When one is honored, both are honored. What you've done enables him to do things. If he is honored, it's your honor as well. So she is admirable. Verse 24. The entrepreneurial theme is repeated. She makes linen garments and sells them. She supplies belts to the tradesmen. You could say she's an entrepreneurial capitalist. And that may be contrary to political speech, for some reason, it seems like the school's capitalist is a bad name. Well, without capitalists, we wouldn't be sitting here this morning. We'd be out sitting on a log somewhere around a campfire. It's capitalists that have managed to make things function. Most of you would not have a job if it wasn't for some capitalist. She is. She's in business. She's making linen garments. Now, most likely, they're articles of clothing. Linen was commonly used for undergarments, or they were light clothing for summer. And she's making these. It also says she has this, it's either a belt manufacturing business or she's trading in belts. But then she's taking these to the international traders. She's selling both of them. Probably the Phoenicians, they were the ones most likely in international trade at that time in Israel. And so she's in international trade. But that's where she was getting these exotic things she was looking at earlier. Remember, she was like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. Where would she get those things? Where'd she get the purple clothes, the scarlet clothes? She's busy interacting with the traders. In all this, she's dignified. Look at verse 25. Because this verse, and actually the next two verses in verse 30, are the most important aspects of her character. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. Now, she may wear elegant clothes, but her real beauty is this personal dignity that she has. If she didn't have that dignity, she'd be more akin to Proverbs 11:22, a well-adorned pig. You're not familiar with that one. It says, as a ring of gold and a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. All right, you got the outside looking good, but without the dignity there, you might as well be a pig with a gold ring in its snout. Because the real beauty is in the character, in the dignity, the godliness. Based on her strength and dignity, she smiles the future, for she has absolutely nothing to fear. The commentator Arnott put this well. He said, if honor be your clothing, your suit will last a lifetime. But if clothing be your honor, it will soon be worn threadbare. She's wise, verse 26. I'm not surprised at that at all as we've watched her character develop. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. A fitting ornament, this wisdom, especially in the expression of it, in kindness in her tongue. She is a capable teacher. What is wisdom? We've already looked at that in Proverbs. The practical application in life of the proper fear of God. Foolishness is living as if there is no God. Wisdom lives life mindful of the Lord. And this woman is wise, and she reflects that wisdom in a kind and gracious tongue. How she encourages and teaches others. She's also watchful, verse 27. Her wisdom is expressed to her family is that she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. So she keeps watch over the activities of the home. She directs the work to be done, and she's not someone who folds her hands and watches others do the work. She's involved in what's occurring. The household runs well because she has it organized and she manages it. Her watchfulness, in addition, protects her from the dangers of idleness, which 1 Timothy warns us about. In fact, it tells us very specifically, do not support widows who are idle because they're busybodies. There's a lot of danger there. She is active. And remember that this watchfulness for her includes these servants that she has. We saw earlier in the passage. She's watchful for them. There's managing skills. Arnott put it this way, another good quote concerning idleness. Empty hours, empty hands, empty companions, empty words, empty hearts draw in evil spirits as a vacuum draws in air. To be occupied with good is the best defense against the inroads of evil. I hope you're occupied with good and not sitting around, because as soon as you do, that's when danger occurs. Be very careful of how much time you spend with entertainments, especially the idiot box, television. The idiot box. I'll let you figure out which part of the idiot is, whether it's the one watching it or the things that are on it. But be very careful, because that stuff leads to all sorts of problems. Because pretty soon you start thinking that life is like what's on being presented on TV, and it is not. We live in a sick society, and this stuff is constantly thrown out of you. That's the way you should live. Go back to the Word of God. That's the way we are supposed to live. Go out and carry out that work. Frankly, if you're doing that, you're probably too busy to sit down anyways. And when you do, you're too exhausted to watch something because you're just going to go to sleep. So be careful. This is an important one. Are you diligent? Are you dignified? Are you really